And welcome to Dragons, Gazelles, and Unicorns. It's a podcast that brings to light breakthroughs in commercialization, economic impact, and investment dynamics. I'm Rosemary Truman, founder and CEO of the Center for Advanced Innovation, and I'm absolutely thrilled to have a guest speaker on today that's very, very special. His name's Tien Wong. Tien is has had an elaborate and rich career. He is a serial entrepreneur. He just launched the Phoenix Fund. I'm really excited to hear more about that today. And he runs Connect to Premier. He is simply a maestro at putting the right people together to make things happen. So I'm absolutely thrilled to have you on the show today, Tien.
Thanks, Rosie. It's a pleasure to be here.
I would love it if you could give us a little bit of a background on how you got to where you are.
From going back how far?
Oh, well, go as far back as you want. To give us the journey.
Absolutely. My parents are immigrants and they came here from China and, well, Hong Kong and Malaysia, respectively. I'm Chinese, 100% Chinese American, born in New Jersey. My dad had Chinese restaurants and that was my first work experience. I was working in the restaurant from a fairly young age until all through high school. And that's where I really learned the important lessons of customer service and hard work. And then I went on to college, played a year of tennis at college. And then after, in college, I had three companies, three businesses. And then after I got out of college, I eschewed the corporate recruiting route and grad school and ran a business, which did not work out too well. And then I went to law school and then dropped out. But I was in the commercial real estate sector for 5 years and then met up with a couple friends of mine and we decided to start a business that wound up becoming a pretty large CRM company that we wound up getting private equity financing for and exiting to a Fortune 500 company. And after that, I became an investor and acquired and invested in several companies, mostly in the technology space, mostly here on the East Coast. About 9.5 years ago, started Connectpreneur, which is a global community of 20,000 people. We've done 54 events and have had over 20,000 people attend our events. And basically, that's a celebration of innovation and entrepreneurship and angel investment. And and like you said earlier, we are in the process of starting our formal Phoenix Fund, which is an investment vehicle that will be investing in three main sectors: fintech, marketing technology, and health technology.
Well, I have 1,000 questions for you. on just the Phoenix Fund, what are the stage of companies that you're looking for?
We're doing pretty much seed and A. We will do some B and B plus rounds, but we are not a lead investor. We are a tag along investor, and our value proposition to the companies and to the lead investors that we are very, very well connected and have good domain expertise in those three verticals: fintech, health tech, and marketing tech. So that's, you know, we can actually source customers for some of our portfolio companies.
That's fantastic. And so why did you launch, what was the inspiration behind launching Connectpreneur?
Connectpreneur, well, about almost 10 years ago, we were doing similar networking events for some of the portfolio companies that we own. And we were having guest speakers come in and we would do a roundtable of CEOs, maybe 20 CEOs at breakfast. And then we'd do a roundtable for another 20 CEOs for lunch. And we were doing these every other month, basically. And then someone said, well, why don't you just do one big event and invite your CEOs and have great speakers? And that's really the genesis of Connectpreneur. It was basically an outgrowth of the marketing that we were doing on behalf of some of our portfolio companies. And it wound up taking on a life of its own. But that was sort of the beginning of it. And the first few events were small. They were very modest affairs, 140 people or so at the Tower Club. And then we soon outgrew the Tower Club, had to go to hotel ballrooms. And then the rest is history. We've had upwards of 880 people at our events. And I know you've spoken at a few and you've attended several, so thank you for your support there. But I think the need in the Mid-Atlantic was for a venue that really facilitated C-level to C-level deal making and connecting, and investor and entrepreneur connecting and deal making, because, you know, you really didn't have many events where you had principals involved. Mostly it was service providers selling to each other, And nobody, if you're an entrepreneur, that's not really helpful to you. And if you're an investor, it certainly isn't helpful. And I think the reason is the quality of the attendees that we've been able to draw and the quality of the speakers, investors, and other, you know, successful entrepreneurs such as yourself and others. And I think that that's sort of maintaining that quality about our product has been a big reason why it's been so popular.
It's a fantastic event. I mean, the events are fantastic. I mean, the speakers are great. The ability to connect is, or everyone's, it's interesting how you've been able to kind of galvanize this community of people that are open-minded and willing to meet anyone, really.
Yeah, I think I'd love to take credit for it, but really, I think the market was in dire need of some kind of a venue like that, a forum where entrepreneurs and investors could get together and network and be very efficient about their engagement. Again, there really weren't any other events in the region that had that level of, not just the level of seniority of attendees, but also just the quality of the attendees. And again, most of the events that we're all accustomed to are very heavily service provider reliant, and they're not as useful to principals as, so I think part of it was, there was just a huge need for it. And we, you know, we had the ability to draw a lot of great entrepreneurs in one room and a lot of great investors in one room and put them together. And I think that our ability to continue doing that, and even post-pandemic, we have attendees and investors and entrepreneurs from all over the world now that join in on our monthly events. I think that's been the reason why people are still coming to our events and enjoying themselves.
And how much did it grow after the pandemic started? Because you have this now global audience. Did it grow significantly?
Yeah, we were doing 8 events a year in person, and we're now doing monthly events. And the average attendee, usually we have, right now we're ranging between 550 and 900 RSVPs for our virtual events. And our in-person events range from 300 people to 600 people. So I would say on balance, you know, basically generally speaking, the virtual events are better attended. Mm-hmm. And also the utilization of the private chat feature. So these are online events. They're not webinars. They're actually events where the attendees can all see each other. Mm-hmm. And we publish a list of all the attendees ahead of time and also after. So if you're attending, you know who's going to be there. So you can actually reach out to them on email or LinkedIn. And then during the event, you can private message them. So the feedback we've been getting from our attendees is that that's extremely efficient and useful.
Yeah,
it's better than going to a ballroom and hoping you can run into somebody.
Yeah, I've actually found some of the virtual events much more efficient.
Yeah.
For example, we had a judging panel with Children's National, and all the judges, I think there are about 30 of us, and the judging that we did together also for Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
I mean, it was great because you get to meet everybody. You get to talk. I mean, then you can just chat with them and set up meetings right there.
Absolutely.
With anybody. I mean, it's fantastic.
It really is good for both sides, for people that are, you know, wanting to meet with someone and for someone that's being solicited. If they don't want to be solicited, they can just say no thank you, or they can ignore the request. But it's very efficient, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And the ability to meet everybody is just fantastic. So I wanted to go back to the 3 companies that you launched in college. What were they?
Well, I had a custom printed painter hat business, which we were selling retail and wholesale custom printed painter hats. I don't think, I'm dating myself, we don't have painter hats anymore, but they used to be these hats that painters would wear, and they're made out of cotton muslin or polyester. And we'd get custom printing done on them, like go Harvard, Harvard, or go Dartmouth, Harvard sucks was a very big seller. But we, you know, so local prep schools, high schools, universities, we'd have a campus rep and they would order directly from us and we would wholesale to them. And also for the Dartmouth games or the big Harvard Yale games, we would actually get them printed ourselves and sell them on the street. That was one business. I had another business. I went to college at Dartmouth, which is in a small town up in New Hampshire, and it shut back in the 80s. It shut down early. So the partying didn't shut down early, but the restaurants did. So we filled the need for food. So we had a business called Panda Snacks, which we would heat up out of a dorm room. We would heat up Chinese food and deliver it to students. And then we had another business that was providing exam survival kits for parents to get in touch with their students. And you know, we would have things like food and soda, caffeine, personal notes, little gift items that we would deliver during exam time.
That's great. Well, how did you market that?
Well, we had something called the freshman book for each of the classes, and they had their addresses in there. This was before Facebook. This was the analog version of Facebook.
Wow.
We would actually hand type on a typewriter, on envelopes, letters to all of the students in the college. It's like 4,000 letters we would do every cycle. And then we'd have to photocopy the stuff and have it folded and printed and hand stamped. Yeah, it was very laborious back then.
Wow, that's amazing. And I have to go back all the way to the beginning where you were working in the Chinese restaurant, because you knew I have a, you know, you and I both love Chinese food.
Oh yeah.
And I waitressed from age 13 to age 19, because that's when I graduated from college. But I loved it. I mean, I loved waitressing. What jobs did you do in the restaurant?
I was in charge of takeout orders on Friday and Saturday night. I would do maitre d'ing. So I would be like bringing people to their seats and cashiering. So nothing super crazy, but just helping out my dad.
That's really great.
Yeah.
So if we go a little bit more detail about the Phoenix Fund, how far along are you? Have you identified any investment targets or?
Yeah, we're open for business, and we will invest as a bridge to our first close. We're expecting to do a first close in Q1. We've got a good number of soft commitments. We are looking at institutional commitments right now. So until we get a lead institutional investor, and we are talking to several, we're not going to do a first close, but we are in the meantime making investments. Yeah, we're looking actively for deals, and we will put our own capital to work and then put those investments into the fund upon close.
And are you looking for anything like specific syndicates?
Not really. We haven't. I mean, we've been asked to join many syndicates, both on AngelList and also outside of AngelList. So it depends on the deal. You know, we do have one of our investment theses is that we want to invest in underserved markets. So founders who are super resilient. We also want to allocate half of our capital to women, minorities, and immigrants. So because we feel like they've overcome more adversity than most. And the science is also, not the science, but the research is also pretty clear, the limited research, that those companies that are led by those founders and founding teams outperform the general public of early stage companies. So we are looking for companies that that have founders and founding teams that have that resilience factor. And we are looking at a lot of opportunities right now.
I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you, but 60% of our startups are co-founded by minorities, and 40% are co-founded by women. And 46% of startups are in underserved, kind of underprivileged ecosystems.
Wow, congrats on that.
Yeah,
you've gone out of your way too, right? To actively look for those types of opportunities, right?
Yes,
but they're out there.
Yeah, they're out there. I mean, a lot of talent that just doesn't have access to, or have the foundation or the ability to the platform, if you will, to even launch a company. Since our challenge model is virtual, they can just come into our challenge, and our accelerator is all virtual. So we're able to reach a lot of people that wouldn't necessarily normally be able to get reached.
Yeah, no, you guys are doing great work. It's very, very it's amazing what you guys are doing.
Thank you.
On that.
So I'll go back to something that, you know, today's election day. So how is the voting out there?
Well, I voted ahead of time. So I watched CNN just before we went on, and it seems like according to CNN, there's been relative calm in the voting polls, voting areas of the swing states that they've been covering. So hopefully things will be calm, and we'll have a decent democratic process.
Yeah, it's been, my friends who actually have gone to the polls, they said it was in and out. Just pretty simple. They just texted me, said it took me 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think like 102 million ballots were cast early, which is a record by far. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, though. You know, I think the Senate races look interesting as well, not just the presidential race.
Mm-hmm. So how is what's the impact going to be for you, given one or the other?
Well, you know, we've been through some storms in the past, you know, in 87 and late 90s and 08 and now. And, you know, what I tell my portfolio companies, my partners, is you can only control what you can control. And you can only worry about what you can control. Don't worry about stuff that you can't control, because it's a waste of energy. I mean, you want to be prepared for as many scenarios as possible, but really try to stay true to your mission and, you know, navigate within those rails, but don't get caught up in the hoopla, the noise, because you know, stuff that you can't control, really, it doesn't benefit you to focus on that. What you can control is how you navigate, you know, how you shuck and jive and pivot and innovate throughout all of the stuff that's being thrown at us. So the answer is, you know, who knows what's going to happen? It's going to be very uncertain for sure, no matter who wins. And also what happens with the pandemic and with social unrest in the economy. But, you know, our businesses have to be very micro in their focus and focus on their customers and do the best job they can for their customers, take care of their people, do the best they can for their people. And hopefully, you know, the good things will happen. And I think maintaining the adaptability, flexibility, the ability to pivot and spot opportunity is critical in this environment. If you're fixed in your thinking and fixed in your actions, that's a recipe for disaster, I think, because things are really fast moving out there.
Just taking some notes. So, you know, you're all about keeping 10 plates or more spinning in the air at the same time. We'd love to hear your secrets about how you manage that. You've been doing it your whole life, it sounds like.
Yeah, I wish I could say there's a secret. To me, there's no real secret. It's keeping things real simple, blocking and tackling, knowing what the outcomes we want for the day are. And I think having a daily practice is important with a couple of simple things and making sure we look at what's really important to do for the day, the two or three things that we must get done. And then just focusing as hard as we can. So that's sort of how we approach everything. And then, you know, with respect to the plates, yeah, we have plates, but we also have great people. We have a great team that's supporting. And, you know, none of this gets done without our awesome teams. And it's critical because, you know, you need really good people to execute on your ideas.
Yeah, I have to tell you, you know, it's my team. They're amazing.
They are
extremely fortunate.
I mean, yeah. So you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. You know, you really need to have great people that can know what you want. They can actually think for themselves. They're resourceful. They're creative. They know what the customer wants, and then they can deliver it.
So you're also the wizard and the maestro of entrepreneurship, right? Could you provide some of your wisdom regarding how to be successful in this environment? I mean, you already mentioned that focusing as hard as you can, keeping things really simple.
Well, I think the most important thing of all is to stay calm. Number one, you have to be relaxed, because if you're not, look at any great team, great athletic performer, great actor, actress. If you are not calm and have your, you know, 100% clear thinking, you cannot perform it at peak capacity. There's no way. So I've always told everyone, and myself included, you know, relax, you know, breathe, meditate, do whatever it takes. Get yourself in a state where you can think clearly and make good decisions and take good actions. Because if you are nervous, upset, fearful, worried about something, it's going to cloud how you operate. So number one piece of advice is relax, or figure out a way to relax. And then from there, I would say you really need to know your customer. You need to know your customer inside and out, their pain points. You know, what do they need? And then you have to know yourself. You have to know what your company does, what your product does, the solution you're offering and try to match as close as you can customers' needs with your product and your service, and focus like a laser on that intersection and make sure that the customer is super happy with everything you do. It's so basic to do that. I learned that in a restaurant business. My dad had a very successful restaurant because he knew his customers and he had the best food. And, you know, I mean, it sounds simple, but it applies to any business. You know, every business has a customer and every business has a solution or a product. And the best businesses are able to put the two together and just go deep. And I think the deeper you go, the more sustainable the business is. So I think no matter what, in a good environment or a bad environment, macro, one has to do the best they can. In a micro environment, yeah, there's a lot of waves out there, you know. I think the key is to focus on the customer and focus on your people. I think with the waves, you know, that we're facing on the economic and pandemic front, you know, we have to really take care of our people. So it's critical that we support them and communicate with them and keep them motivated, because they will have choices. And also we as employers have choices too, because this is a once in a generation opportunity to find great talent, I think. So I think in terms of navigating, you know, and if it's for an individual purpose, I think the same goes, you know, first you want to relax. Secondly, you want to know what your goals are. What's your outcome? What's your personal outcome? What is it, a job you want? Is it a promotion? Is it a customer you're trying to sell? And then know your special value that you bring to the table. What do you do better than anyone else in the world? I would start with that. What do you do? What's your superpower? What can you do better than anyone in the world? And if there's nothing there, then what do you do better than anyone in the country? What do you do better than anyone in the city? And then just go deep on that. Play to your strengths. I've been a big fan of playing to strengths rather than trying to repair weaknesses. I think you can hire for weakness, but if you have super strengths, you have to go deep on that, because that's your competitive advantage. So for individuals, you know, is to find out what your competitive advantage is and really leverage it as best as you can. And I think that that'll help in any environment.
Etienne, how would you guide people if they think about it, they don't really, can't put their finger on it?
Well, that's a great question. I think you have to do a lot of thinking. You know, it depends on where you are in your career and your age and your experience level, but look back on where were you successful? Where were you most happy? You know, what were you doing where you were getting great feedback, where you had a customer or a friend or a client or something that was giving you great feedback that you were doing very well and that you enjoyed? And try to find the overlap between what you enjoy and what you're good at, and then kind of go from there. And I think that I have 50-year-old friends that really don't know what their true purpose is. They don't really know themselves. And it's fine. They're still searching. So maybe none of us ever really get there, you know, but it requires some introspection. I think if you want to succeed in the market today, I mean, you can get lucky. Of course, luck is a big thing. Luck is 75%. But I think also if you want to help make your own luck, I think you got to spend the time and really dig deep and try to figure out what drives you, what makes you excited, what gets you up in the morning. You know, what about the best jobs you ever had? What about those jobs did you love? And then the worst jobs you ever had, what about those jobs did you hate? And try to figure out, you know, who you are, or at least try to get an idea of who you are. And then from there, you can build on that. But it's not easy. I mean, it's really not easy. You know, when I ask my interns or, you know, junior employees or whatever, you know, what's your superpower? They usually need a couple of weeks to figure it out. They're to think about it, because they don't really know. They never thought about that. No one ever asked them before. You know, what do they do different or better than anyone else in the world? But if you really look hard enough, you are number one in the world at something. Maybe it's a combination of things, you know, but there's no one in the world that can beat you at that one combination of things, you know?
Mine might be eating hot pepper.
Yours might be what?
Eating hot pepper.
Eating hot pepper.
We haven't had that discussion before. I don't think we've ever had that contest.
No, we haven't.
No, I'm really good at it. Anyway, on the personal side. But yeah. What is your superpower?
I think I have two really good skills. When you put them together, it's pretty super. One is the ability to take complex situations or problems and be able to simplify to explain to somebody, which is something that it took me a long time to figure out that I'm good at it, but you know, but I am. I can see complex things and dumb it down and then explain it to people. So that's one superpower. Another one is I have really good spatial intelligence. So for example, when I see a building, I usually don't forget the building.
Wow.
Yeah, so I can see photographs of buildings and know exactly what street they're on, where they are, what city. I can see landscapes and remember that as well.
Oh, wow.
And then I have pretty good rapport building skills. So if I put the three together, you know, having great rapport building skills, great spatial intelligence, and an ability to understand complex things and explain them to people, that would be my combination superpower. And I think I'm pretty good at that. Wow. I don't know how I can leverage that to, you know, to achieve greatness, but I feel like I'm in the top, very high top 1% of each of those three.
Well, I think so. I've never heard anyone rattle off every single famous baseball person and when they won. You were at my house and you were talking about that. You were going through all of these different baseball games and who the players were and who hit how many shots. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, certain things, you know, stick with you for different reasons. It's inexplicable. But I think everybody has some kind of talent. Some people are great at piano, great at dancing, great at poetry, great at making people laugh. You know, I mean, people have different talents. People are amazing. So I think it's important for people to find out what their talents are and then try to, if they want to apply it to their career, great. If they apply it to their life, great. You know, but it's a big search to do that. Yeah.
So, you know, we come around, come through this pandemic, and what do you think the next big challenge is going to be? Do you think it's going to be, for example, the distribution of the vaccines? What do you think we're going to see next?
Wow, I mean, there's a lot of challenges. I think one is going to be leadership in the country. No matter who the president is or who the Congress is, there's got to be some leadership here because lives are at stake, the economy is at stake, and you have a lot of opposition and a lot of division. So we're going to need a group of people to come together and bring the country together for sure, I hope. The vaccine, I mean, yeah, we have to build confidence in the vaccine whenever it comes out. And then it's got to be mass produced. And we have to be realistic about the fact that not everyone's going to want a vaccine right away. There's several people that are going to wait 3 or 6 months and see what the side effects are, see if this thing's real, to believe in something that was rushed, you know? And then mass production and then distribution for sure. And then coming up with a therapeutic is going to be critical. I think we just don't know enough about what's happening. And, you know, it's great to see all these brilliant minds working on solutions and inventions and ways to solve a problem and prevent it from happening and to fix what's going on. It's amazing. I don't think in human history, I don't think this has happened before, where you see so many talented geniuses working on the same problem to fix this common enemy, you know? So I think that's one really good thing. But I think, yeah, we're gonna have challenges. We're gonna have economic challenges probably as well. And I think we're going to have to reset how we do a lot of our things, how social interaction happens on a business context and on a personal. I was on a Zoom funeral yesterday.
Oh my gosh.
Bizarre. Wow. It was bizarre. I mean, you know, it was sad. My wife's aunt passed away from COVID.
I'm sorry.
But I mean, I'm glad we were able to see the funeral at least, you know, because, you know, Zoom funerals were not a thing up until several months ago. But I think human interaction is going to change. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think there's a replacement for face-to-face meeting or face-to-face contact, but I think people are going to get used to it. Plus, we got a whole generation of you know, Gen Z and millennials who are getting, you know, impacted. They're hit by 08, then they're hit by this. How's that going to affect their confidence level going forward? How's it going to affect their self-esteem? How's it going to affect their view on the world? You know, the depression affected a whole generation or two of our parents and grandparents, right? For example. So what's that going to mean for the economy and for the future of society, not just in the US, but worldwide, mm-hmm. you know? But I think there's going to be a lot of challenges for sure. I think, you know, people want that are going to thrive are going to be the ones that embrace the challenges. They see the opportunity inside the challenge. They have a greater good in mind. They have an abundance mentality. And, you know, they're going to do what they can to make the world a better place in their own little way or in their big way. But those are the ones that are going to do fine, because that's the reality. I think, as Shakespeare said, you know, nothing's ever good or bad. It just is. And it just is. So I think we have to face up to reality. And then, you know, once we understand the reality and sinks in, then figure out how we're going to deal with it.
Yeah, just to build on what you're talking about, I was working with one of my friends on, she's working on a grant for some of the issues that are ancillary with COVID. And it's a really significant issue. The suicide rate for children has gone up by 27% since the pandemic.
That is such a shame.
Yeah, and then bullying and sexting and all these other, you know, horrible things have increased dramatically on the internet standpoint. So the kids, not only are they not able to see each other and the social challenges, but then, you know, the internet crimes and have gone up so dramatically that and their ability to cope and verbally be aware of their emotions has been decreased. And then as a result, you know, the suicide rates have gone up.
Yeah, I mean, these are tragic situations. I mean, so we're gonna have to come up with some quick fixes for these, you know, these trends that are going on. I'll be very curious to see what big tech does too in the next next year to three, you know, what are they gonna do? You know, are they gonna get more quote unquote responsible, or are they gonna be more hands off? Mm-hmm. Forget about what Congress is doing. Let's talk about what they're gonna do for themselves, for their customers. What do their customers want? You know, Google is do no evil, right? So if you're really about do no evil, then are you gonna take the steps necessary to prevent bad things from happening using your platform? You know, so it'll be interesting to see what happens coming out of the valley. You know, these guys have are they gonna step up and show some serious leadership? Because maybe they're the ones that are gonna be leading us out of this mess, not the politicians. But they have the power to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, Facebook, Amazon, you know, Google, they all do. Twitter, I mean, they have the power of the platform. They have the media. They have hundreds of millions of users. They can, billions of users. They can actually influence humanity for the better if they want.
Do you see them trying to collaborate to address some of these issues?
I don't know enough about their strategy or their philosophy. I would love to see them do it, but you know, are they driven by greed? Are they driven by shareholders? Are they, you know, I don't know. That's a good question. Are they going to collaborate to save themselves, to protect what they've got? You know, to build bigger moats around the castle? I don't know, but you know, it'll be really interesting to see what happens. Really interesting.
We were talking about some of the silver linings really that have come out of this, which is one of them being collaboration, massive collaboration for all these scientists and you know, really intelligent people coming together to try to figure out what could a vaccine look like, what could a diagnostic look like, a therapeutic. Because I mean, the diagnostics, at the beginning when we went into this, the diagnostics were taking 4 weeks. And because it was very difficult to, the supply chain was broken for what's called biosafety level 3 labs. So in order to do testing for diagnostics, you actually had to send the specimen someplace else. I mean, like in the DC DMV area, we had no biosafety level 3 labs that are also ISO certified. So as a result, our ability to do anything here, it was nil. So, and now those supply chain problems need to be fixed. But so I think that's good. I mean, it's good that we at least now know that they weren't even known. I mean, there were unknowns. So I think that's going to be fixed. The collaborations are strong. What any other silver linings you see coming out of this pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have a better pandemic response for the future. I mean, I think you saw China, Taiwan, Japan, they did well because they had SARS. So they were ready. This is not their first rodeo. So the next one won't be our first rodeo. We'll have some lessons learned. I think that you're gonna see new models. You know, I think what's good is the creative destruction that's going on. So the pandemic has put in place, basically it's accelerated trends that were already happening, both good and bad. So it accelerated the trend towards teleworking, working from home, using Zoom and video conferencing. It accelerated the demise of models that are broken, that don't work, whether it's supply chain related or real estate related or hospitality related. I'm really fascinated by some of the hospitality and innovation that you're seeing. You know, there's a company here called Hungry that's in the food services business. They've pivoted three times and created, well, you and I were judging the Innovation Awards. They won one of the awards. I mean, they've done amazingly. And I think that, you know, the survival of the fittest being the most adaptable. It's true. The most adaptable will survive. And you're going to see new business models, I think. So, you know, we're digitizing everything. We're moving towards touchless. We're moving towards convenience. You know, this whole e-shopping, Amazon, you know, convenience of ordering on a computer and having stuff delivered to you, all that stuff is accelerating. And I think that, I think I'm really excited about what could happen with e-learning. I think that finally this situation we're in is accelerating the demise, rightly so, of old ways of learning. And I think that we do have a societal gap right now, the haves versus the have-nots. Unfortunately, some of the have-nots are really not doing well with the distance learning situation. Over time, I hope the gap narrows, but I'm really excited about educating the next generation of leaders and students, because with what's happening now, the ability to give them rich content and ways to learn that were not primary ways of learning before, they're now going to be more adaptable. And also I'm excited about personalized education. I think that, you know, people are going to be able to have a curricula custom designed for themselves, and that's going to help them in the job market as well as in life. So I think we're leaving the sort of uniformity of teaching one way, one style to a whole diverse set of students, to hopefully eventually breaking up the silos and being able to offer personalized education to individual sets of students. And helping them with the new economy, because I think I read something that Gartner study was that the job requirements for a particular job in 2017, of those set of requirements, a third are no longer relevant 3 years later. So skill sets are really changing. The need for skills and things like communication skills, empathy skills, motivational skills, stuff that you don't learn in school. Those are now critically important for people in the job market. And, we're gonna be able to offer programs to teach people those skills, which they couldn't learn inside of a schoolhouse, you know?
Being resilient is also a skill.
Resilience, absolutely, yeah.
And I think the awareness that we were talking about earlier about, you know, how do you know what your superpower is?
Self-awareness is and situational awareness are critical.
It's fascinating to me I reflect on my life and I think about awareness in particular and how you really grow over time in that skill set.
Yeah, I think a combination of experience and adversity and you know, you learn more by losing, you learn more through your defeats. So I think by more experience, you know, you learn and you become more aware over time. And then you apply that and you realize how unaware you were as a young kid, you know, and it's, That's life, though. I mean, that's just life. That's what life's all about. It's a continuum of learning, you know?
Yep. You're not learning or dying, right? I'm really curious about what you see as, going back to your point about real estate and that changes that will happen with real estate, as many people, for example, we were just talking about Google and Facebook and so on, they're not gonna go back to work, I think, for the indefinitely.
Yeah, I think between probably Q4 of next year is when they're all coming back to work. And I think in the meantime, they're allowing people to work from wherever they want in the world. There may be some salary adjustments, there may not be, but you know, I think if that's gonna happen, Q4 of next year, you know, then we should get ready for it. I think that I read something that said roughly 2/3 of the American workforce is still spending for part-time at home. And of that workforce, fully 2/3 of that group would like to stay at home. So if you do the numbers, that's 35-40% of the entire workforce wants to do stuff from home. Mm-hmm. So even with social distancing requiring more real estate space, you know, real estate is going to take a 20% demand, probably, you know, reduction in demand, I would say, 20-25%. And that could be devastating for the industry because that's sort of where the margins are made. And a lot of these assets are highly leveraged. Mm-hmm. You know, the owners that own these office buildings, they put a lot of debt on it, you know, that's serviced with the rent. And if the rent's down 20%, that's going to really hurt them. So I don't know what that means. I mean, rates are low, which is a good thing, but there's going to be a lot of restructuring, I think, in the debt markets with the CLOs and also with the bank debts. Over time, maybe we'll see something like in 08, 09, where there's a delay in pray, you know, kind of an extend and pretend, so you don't mark to market the assets and you kind of just carry them on the books and hope the economy recovers. Maybe we'll see some of that, but really, I think the Fed leadership is going to be critical too. So we've got to make sure that, see what the Federal Reserve is doing and the people that really matter in the government, they really make those decisions, could make or break the economy long-term. But I think real estate, residential is good. You'll see some adaptive reuse, I think. You'll see retail being converted to different types of uses. You know, I don't know what you do with movie theaters for now, you know, but housing's hot still, rental and sale, you know, single family homes. I read a report the other day saying that single family homes are gonna be developed like crazy. There's sort of record low supply and high demand and rates are low. So that's going to stimulate the residential real estate market. And then people buying homes and renovating homes and buying furniture, that's going to be a big plus for the economy. Well, so I think a commercial office, though, I think they're going to have to figure out ways to maybe adapt a little bit.
I agree. I did go to the movies last month. And
you did?
I did. There's only two people on a Saturday night in this giant movie theater at Pike and Rose.
I didn't even know they were open.
Yeah, they're open. But there's no one in there. There's no one going. So they have all these people working and
wow,
no one's there to watch the movie.
Well, they got to pay their rent.
I know.
So that'll be interesting to see.
What do you think about gyms?
Well, a lot of young people I know are going back to the gym. You know, I'm not ready to go back to the gym yet because I don't want to risk getting COVID. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, I think, I mean, gyms are, people are on top of each other. You know, there's the air is not really highly circulating that well and people are sharing equipment. And I don't know. I'm not going to any gyms anytime soon. But young people I know are, and God bless them, you know?
Yeah, I went back to the gym a few times, but I couldn't breathe in the mask. You know, I mean, you have to wear the mask the whole time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like, it just gets all snot. It's all over the place. It's horrible. And then
it's hard to exercise with a mask on.
Yeah, it's really hard. And so then you have a mediocre workout, so why bother going? If I could work out at home and I just work, you know, I work myself up very well. And then I also say, okay, I just wasted an hour of my time because I had a crappy workout.
You have a huge house. You can put a gigantic home gym in.
I know. I know. I have tons of money
in your house too.
I do, yeah. Yeah, so I don't need to really leave my house.
Right, right. No, absolutely.
So is there anything else that you would like to leave the listeners, the entrepreneurs, the investors with today?
I mean, I think people should not worry too much. I think if you're an optimistic person and you have that entrepreneurial bug and that entrepreneurial spark and drive, things will work out. You know, the other thing is the U.S. economy is going to move forward no matter what. It is an aircraft carrier moving forward. It's not going to matter who's the president or who's in Congress. It's still going to kick butt. And it's done that for decades, if not centuries. You know, yeah, there'll be bumps along the way, but in general, that economy is solid and it's driven by American ingenuity and American prosperity and creativity. And I know long-term, I'm bull, total bull, mid and long-term. Who knows what's going to happen tomorrow or in the next 60 days, but long, mid and long-term, I wouldn't worry too much. And I think if you're trying to build your business, yeah, just try to relax, focus on your customer and focus on what you're really excellent at and make sure that what you're excellent at matches with what your customer needs and go deep and go hard. And I think that who knows what'll happen. Hopefully you'll succeed, you know, but just worry about what you can control. I wouldn't worry about stuff that you can't control. It's a waste of energy, actually, you know?
Yeah. So there's one more question for you. You've said go deep a few times. Can you tell
that? I said what?
You said go deep.
Yes. Yeah.
So what do you mean by that?
Meaning go all in, you know, just put all your resources, focus your resources heavily on the objective. So when you're chopping down a tree, what do? You hit the tree multiple times in the same spot over and over and over again till it comes down. You don't hit it up here, down here, you know, focus on that one area and just like a laser and just hit it hard, 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 hard. And, you know, by maximizing and by focusing that attention and energy, because all entrepreneurs have limited time, money, resources, and energy, right? We all have those limits. So what little we have, we want to put it together and just drive it into one area. And does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I mean, you mentioned it in a couple different ways now.
Basically, what I'm saying is just focus on the objective and be relentless on that.
A couple of other things that you said I really liked. Keeping things really simple. Identifying what you need to get done that day and getting it done. Embrace challenge and have an abundance mentality. You make your own luck, find your superpower.
Yeah, and there's no really good or bad, it just is. So, you know, the impediment to action advances action. You know, Marcus Aurelius, right? The great Stoic. It's so true. Like, you know, the impediment could well be the reason you're successful. The Japanese have a management theory where the problem is actually the solution to the problem. It's an ironic way to think, you know, but it's very true. And we're all the sort of the sum parts of all of our experiences, and our experiences are all dictated by what obstacles we had to overcome and what paths we chose. And it's the same thing in business. I think if you have something that appears to be a roadblock, maybe that's not a roadblock. Maybe that's a catalyst for something else.
It's kind of like my company.
It's like
I came across all the roadblocks and got around them. That's why I created my company.
Yeah. Well, you're living proof. You're, you know, exhibit A of that.
Thank you, Tim. We basically had all these different blockages to get these inventions and got around all of them and then just started launching startups around these inventions. So it's worked out really well. And the challenge, by the way, the challenge right now is going really well. Innovate Children's Health is fantastic. I'll have to update you on that.
I want to hear all about it.
It's really great. We've been having some amazing startups. And actually some of them are in the VR and AR area.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about the education, the next generation of AR and VR is incredible. And what you can do with it from a health standpoint for children and to address also some of those mental challenges that we were talking about, you know, the PTSD and ADHD and all the other things that are coming with the, that are actually some of the root causes of the suicide. That's why I'm mentioning it. So thank you so much, Tien.
More about the challenge. Good luck with it.
Thank you. I'll tell you more about it.
Stuff. I'm so impressed, really.
Well, thank you so much for all your valuable insights, as always. And I look forward to seeing what the outcome is, and we'll touch base soon.
Yeah. Thank you again, Rosie. Appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.